A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and the name of our podcast today is Massacre at 9th and Main, Mass Murderer Gilbert Twigg. It's kind of an interesting story. It's a story of really what became one of America's first mass killings, mass shootings, that's become so commonplace, but was not so commonplace back in August of 1903, when Gilbert Twigg committed his dastardly deeds. We'll get to that, but before we do, let me introduce our panel. I'm joined by always the caffeine-free.
Nicotine-free.
And nicotine-free.
Have you stopped smoking, though?
Yeah.
So how long have you been off to the devil sticks?
I don't know, like 2 days.
The very lovely and talented pill-popping, penis loving.
I wish I was pill popping.
Are you penis loving at least?
Yeah.
Give me. It depends. Is it every other Friday?
Right. Is it somebody's birthday?
Is it Dave's payday?
Right.
Do you need some shopping money?
Right. God.
The very lovely and talented Brandy. How are you doing, Brandy?
I'm all right, Timmy. How are you?
Fine. I know you're not feeling good. I know this is a rough time for you going through.
Really irritating.
Going through nicotine and caffeine withdrawal at once, which I don't think is a good idea.
I do not believe that's safe.
No.
For you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not really worried about your safety. I'm worried about my own.
Well.
But we are supportive of you and your efforts.
Yes, be supportive of me.
Although, if you need to do something, drink a Coke. Don't smoke. How about that? If you have to break that. But don't do either. But
and if you're going to smoke something, smoke some weed.
Yeah.
Well, I have to, I would have to find some.
Well, maybe our listeners... No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Do not send Brandy any kind of substance like that.
And any type of pharmaceuticals, because Brandy will ask for pharmaceuticals from me.
Yes. I'm also joined by the equally talented...
I'd say more than equally, but go ahead.
No, I wouldn't say that at all.
The very honorable, the Reverend... Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm just doing wonderful today, Timmy. My boy called me and told me that he passed his probationary period and he has a job.
He is officially employed.
He's officially employed and he is almost making as much money as me. He probably works a lot harder, too. Well, he couldn't work less.
Exactly.
But no, I'm doing actually pretty good. My cold's almost going away. Now, you might hear me sniffling. I apologize during this show. My sinuses are just a mess. So I've been using my neti pot, and I encourage all listeners to try a neti pot at least once. It's like being waterboarded with salt water. But it works. It's effective.
So. I've never tried a neti pot, but I have. I get a sinus infection about every other week. So
I have a peculiar thing that I am allergic to medicines for allergies.
Really? So you're?
I cannot take Benadryl and Claritin and things like that.
What happens if you do?
I turn about as red as a lobster, and I have difficulty breathing. And It's quite a freak show.
So if you take allergy medicine, your throat closes.
I did not have that particular thing. What happened was my face turned really red. My heart started beating really, really fast. They had to take me to the emergency room to give me a shot of adrenaline, apparently, really? To clear it up. So my doctor has told me to avoid.
But you could die.
He has told me to heal myself basically through willpower.
So but basically,
you could die if you have some.
You
Benadryl.
Just handed Brandy a method to.
Well, yeah,
so what
I
you're
never,
saying is you could
yeah,
die.
Yeah, I never really thought that
Benadryl.
Through, I guess, but yeah.
So if you can get some Benadryl latent Pop Tarts.
I can take NyQuil.
Oh.
It's the stuff that you make the meth with. What is that stuff?
Yeah. You mean like, yeah, the stuff that's like Sudafed and stuff like that?
Yeah. I cannot have that in my system.
I'm sorry.
My system revolts. And it's really, you know, Timmy, I got a, as you know, I'm a very pure man.
Yeah, I know.
And any type of impurity that runs through me, my system just tries to project out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's like saying the Lord's Prayer in front of someone who's possessed. You just can't take that.
Well, it's like casting the pearls before the swine.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's why I don't talk about the church much in front of the devil.
Right.
So you could die if you took some Benadryl.
She keeps going back to that.
She, yeah. We have moved along, devil. We have moved along.
I just want to make sure I'm hearing everything right. So you make sure that you do not get any of that.
Claritin, no, that's bad for me. But yeah, we have four more members of the church.
Okay, so who are they?
Well, the church is kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous. We do not give the names of members.
I see. So basically, you're making that up.
No, I could give names, but I do not list names because it's
confidentiality.
Well, it's a pastor relationship you have with people.
I see. You got a pastor confidentiality. That
yeah, people confess their sins to me.
Colonel, do we have any shout-outs today?
We have a lot of shout-outs today. Today we decided to break them up a little bit.
Okay, and we're going to go through them quickly so we can get to the story.
Right? You're always wanting to go through something quickly, Timmy. Do you do this when you're having sex? Let's get this over with so
actually,
we can
hammer. Actually, yes.
I got a lot of shout-outs.
Okay.
But we decided today that we do them in a different way. Brandy is going to take the men.
Okay.
And I'm going to take the women.
Brandy's going to do it in her sexy voice, too.
Yeah, she's going to do it. God. Remember when you was working on that porn call-in line?
No,
yeah.
I don't.
Do
1-800-BRANDY.
1-800-THE-DEVIL is, I believe, what it was.
She-devil.
So let's start with Chanda. Chanda, mm-hmm. How you doing? Jessica Bishop, thank you for listening. Lydia, of course. And Jahara Lopez.
Very nice lady.
And correct me, because I'm pretty sure I got that wrong, but Jahira Lopez.
Yeah, I like her name.
I did a great injustice to a fair woman.
Mm-hmm.
I called her Jennifer Williams, when in fact her name is Jessica Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And Jessica is it interacts with us on the page, and I should have got that
very
right.
Very nice lady.
Very nice lady. Very... very peculiar sense of humor, which we liked.
Mm-hmm. And like all the women who follow us, she's very attractive, like all the women.
That's just a peculiar thing.
You know, I've never had attractive women, you know, pay attention to me before. I actually have not even had unattractive women pay much attention.
Women don't
tend
to pay much attention to us.
No.
But, you know, we appreciate them talking to us on our Facebook page.
Yes.
Kirstie Ramsden, hello. Tara, I have not given a shout out to Tara in quite some time. So how you doing, Tara? I hope it's cooling down out there. Diane Trowbridge, never given Diane, she's active on the page. We gave one to Tiffany last week, and I'm going to give her one this week. And you know, we follow, you know, you become friends with people on Facebook, so you see their posts and...
mm-hmm.
Tiffany, I'll tell you, has an unbelievably talented boy. You know I love sports.
Right.
And she put up one of his highlight films. He's going to be a senior this year in high school. He's a tailback for his high school football team.
Good.
Just unbelievably talented kid.
Great.
So hopefully he does well. He'll be probably playing for some college next year. In Waterfall.
I don't think I've even gotten attention from unattractive cross-dressers.
I get attention from from the cross-dressers all the time. Okay. Yeah, because I walk down to the market all the time.
Okay.
So I got to walk past 20 of them. M. Waterfall, how you doing, little Emmy? We love Em.
Yeah, she's over there in Robin Hood territory.
Yeah. Laura.
Mm-hmm.
Laura O'Reilly. No relation to Bill O'Reilly.
Or Radar O'Reilly.
Or Radar O'Reilly. We got Kim Taylor, of course.
Mm-hmm. Down in Beaver Dam, Kentucky.
Down in Beaver Dam. I like Beaver Creek, though. I think but beavers build dams, so I guess that makes sense. But I wonder if they really got a lot of beavers down there.
I don't know. And I think they build a dam, but I don't know if they do really construct it like the Hoover Dam or anything. It's probably just made of twigs.
Oh, my God.
But you know what? Down in that part of the country, how much electricity? Probably half the houses ain't even wired for electricity.
Okay.
So you could probably build a little beaver dam that would, you know, give enough electricity to that whole town. Where did I stop? Trish Hillard.
Mm-hmm.
Closet Cardinals fan, we're not happy about that. We've got Bond.
Jean Bond. Of course
for her. Celine, have not given you a shout out in a while, and we appreciate your twisted sense of humor on the page. Of course, and we've got Jennifer and Shannon. Jennifer
mm-hmm.
Burdick, Shannon, my trusted accountant, who is in Chicago at this very moment.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Spaghetti. Amber Krupp, I'm still waiting for my peanut butter pie. I have not got that yet. And Mary Ray,
mm-hmm.
how you doing? Liz Evans, good to have you contribute to the page. She got. I like her face, her profile picture when she's got the Freddy Krueger looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. And of course, Lady Beverly
mm-hmm.
and Sully.
Mm-hmm.
We love them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I even... Do I have to say a name? Devil, give me a D. Give me a D, Devil.
Oh, my God. Get the fuck on with it.
Give me a D. Come on. Give me
Devil,
a D. I'll stay here all day.
Come
Hi,
on.
Hi, Dottie. Thanks for listening,
Dottie Scott.
Thanks, Mom.
Dottie Scott, you know you're our number... Well, I don't know if you're our number one fan or not, but we are your number one fan, Dottie. So,
all right.
Whoa.
Thank
we
you.
Do this show for you, and before she gets on with hers, let me just say one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this the other night about being an acquired taste. I don't think we're ever gonna be a huge podcast, Jimmy. Because when you look at the...
I can almost guarantee that, Colonel.
But when you look at the nature of the people who follow us, they're a rarely twisted breed.
We choose quality instead of quantity.
Yeah, I mean, every person that jumps in on our page or that we follow, we get to know a little bit, they're all very, very twisted people.
Yes.
And there's just
very
not
nice people.
That many twisted people in the world.
No,
openly
yes,
twisted.
There are.
Yeah, but they're closet twisted. They try to be pretended normal.
Yes.
The people on our page and on our show, they give up even trying to pretend they're normal.
They're our tribe.
Yes, they
are.
And
we appreciate you greatly.
Yes, and I would just add to that list, Nicola.
Oh, no, well, I was getting to Nicola. She was my legal counsel.
Okay, and now, Brandy, you're going to give a shout-out to the men with your sexy voice.
Jesus. Well, all I have is a sexy voice.
Okay.
Clearly. I will try and get through this because I can't read Chuck's writing very well.
Okay.
Tommy Boomershine.
Yeah, Tommy's very active on our page,
yeah.
And we appreciate that, Tommy.
He is. Jeff Chestnut. Marvin. Jeff Girdley. John, is it Con? C-U-N-N?
Oh, it was John
Cunningham.
John Cunningham.
Oh, well, then, see, you should have wrote that. John Cunningham. Okay. Let's see. Michael Goodwin. Alan Dobbs. John Holmes.
Now that's just rude, Devil.
Oh,
not
no.
That John Holmes.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's well endowed.
Yeah, we cleared that up.
Let's see. Michael Moody, Larry Trujillo and Rudy.
Rudabaker.
Oh, for listening.
Oh, Rudabaker's a listener.
And
you know.
Jim Barron.
Oh, yes, Jim.
Jim Barron. Casey appreciates all of your support. I saw him this weekend. He was talking about how much he appreciated that somebody finally was on his team.
Yes.
Well, I believe, you know what, I believe a lot of the women flipped over. They haven't openly done it, but I believe a lot of the women switched to Team Casey.
Casey doesn't deserve to have a team.
Casey is a...
Casey's a fine man.
Casey was blessed with charm, good looks, and a good sense of humor. So,
yeah,
he's much like a younger version of the Colonel.
You should live with him for 20 minutes and see how that goes.
Okay, and I'd also like to especially thank our sponsors through Patreon, Alicia and Chip, Bridget, and Cindy Lou. We certainly appreciate you supporting the show through Patreon. And if you would like to support the show through Patreon, just check out patreon.com/historydweebs, and you can do that. We certainly appreciate it.
Backslash.
So, let's get on with the story. The name of the story is Massacre at 9th and Main. And the story takes place in a small town in Kansas in 1903.
Picture it.
Think of a Norman Rockwell painting.
I was thinking more of John Mellencamp. The music of John Mellencamp. Yeah,
kind of like
was there Little Pink Houses?
Sicily, 1903.
It was 1903. It was in a small town in Kansas. It was in a park where they had a gazebo and a brass band playing. People sitting around drinking lemonade. And this...
bunch of people wearing straw hats, I suppose.
Straw hats, yes. And this Gilbert Tweed came along and... shot a bunch of folks, so we're going to talk about that. That was an odd thing back then. I know now it's like, you know, the fourth story in the news every day, but back then, it was a pretty big deal. But let's talk about Gilbert Twig. First of all, he's got a fucked up name.
And that is kind of a
in itself should
it
have led him
to... You
know
what, and I think it's sad that it's the fourth story in the news now. That it's
I know,
not,
that
it's
so
it's
common.
It's commonplace.
Yeah. But Gilbert Twig was born in a small section of Cumberland, Maryland, known as Flintstone. I just had to pause there because I know you guys are going to
meet
laugh.
The Flintstones.
So hold on. Twig was born in Flintstone?
In a small area of Cumberland, Maryland, known as Flintstone. And he had there was a bunch of twigs. He was not the only twig.
It was a veritable tree of twigs.
His whole family tree was twigs.
Yes, they were. There were so many twigs.
They built a fire.
That by the 1860s, the main family house in the surrounding area was commonly known as Twig Town. And in fact...
Did Twiggy live there?
I don't know if she did or not. But in fact, the name lives on today as a post office in the area. So if you would go there today...
The Twig Post Office.
In Cumberland, Maryland, you'll find Twig Town Post Office. So he was born in February of 1868. We're not sure of the exact date. The details of his early life is a bit sketchy. His parents, his dad, his name was Moses.
Well,
of course, yeah. Was his mother,
I don't think he was that Moses.
Was his mother Abraham?
No,
his mother was Abraham.
His mother was Catherine.
Oh, okay.
So Moses and Catherine Twig. Now, his mother died by the time he was 2 years old. And he started living with his older brother, Isaiah and John, and their grandparents. Now, his grandfather's name was Robert, and his grandmother's name was Eliza. This is not really important to the story.
No.
But you tell me to hurry things along.
But when Robert, his grandfather, died in 1874, all three grandsons got an inheritance. Gilbert's inheritance was $6.04.
Oh, he was living large because you could back then.
Oh yeah, today that's probably $11 today.
No, wait, 1906. That's got to be
$25.
$1874. Oh shit, that's probably $20-$30 today.
Well, anyway, they all lived in Twig Town. And
all the twigs in Twig. That's like all the who's in Whoville.
Yeah, all the twigs were in Twig Town. Now his uncle Argel.
Origel?
Yes.
Origel?
Not Origel.
He invented the Origel.
Argel. No, if he invented Orgel, I would.
I think it was like, Argel.
Is it Argel? Okay, so. Argel. His uncle Argel, who was almost 40 at the time, took his wife Barbara, again, mm-hmm. not important to the story, and headed west. And they went out to Winfield, Kansas. That's probably where about where
did
Charlie.
Gilbert follow them?
No, Charlie lives in Missouri, doesn't she? Yeah, Gilbert did follow them a little bit later on in 1887. Now, it's not clear when he did first arrive in Kansas, but he did move out there to be with his, you know, live around his uncle. The first record of him appearing out there is in 1889. He appeared in out there in, around Thanksgiving time. It was a twig Thanksgiving, followed by a twig Christmas.
His Uncle Argyle and his Aunt Babs?
Yes. So he made the social rounds, and he was considered to be a bright, with a good background and good character. He was pleasant to look at. So I guess that means he was handsome. He had broad shoulders, and he was 5'9".
Was he thin?
I don't know. I said broad shoulders and 5'9".
He was probably very thin.
Now he met a woman. Here comes the funny part. With eyes that petrified his brain and sunk into his heart.
What did he do?
He met a young woman.
Was there. No, what did he do for a living when he was out there?
I don't know. We'll get to that. But he met a young woman.
Can I just stop and ask a quick question?
Yes.
Have you given us any information that's pertinent?
Yes, I'm giving you this guy's whole background.
Twigtown.
Okay, we got Twigtown.
Okay, now he's out in...
She's like Icetown.
Now he's out in Winfield, Kansas, right?
Okay, well, I'm trying to stay with you, but you're losing.
And Winfield, Kansas is a small town.
It's
in south central Kansas. Today, the population is only 12,000, so I don't know what it was back in there. The town is only 12 square miles. I mean, it's 12 square miles, the whole town.
That's a 1,000 person per square mile.
Yeah, that's a lot of people, I guess.
That's a ghetto.
Yeah. Anyway.
God.
While he was out there, he met a young woman. Now, this young woman would play a role in our story. Her name was Jessie Hamilton. She was born and bred. Now, what does really bred mean?
Bread is when
Raised.
You bread is see some people like okay like myself
mm-hmm.
you take a refined gentleman like myself
yes
yeah born and bred on the west side
yeah and it's called proper breeding
I see me. Well she was born
now the devil over here mm-hmm. she was born.
Okay.
She was not bred. I was bred.
I see.
She was born.
Like a show dog, you were bred.
Much like a show dog.
Yeah.
Much like a pedigree.
Kind of like that. But see, here's the problem. Where you come from, it's very incestuous over there. So I don't know that you're a purebred.
Well, you think
I don't
he's
know
kind
that,
of a mixed
I don't know that I could
I think
be.
He's a muggle.
I don't know. I'm a mudblood.
You're a mudblood. I like it.
I don't know that I could be any purer coming from her because they are all related, but we moved in late.
So anyway, Gilbert meets young Jessie Hamilton, who was born and bred in Winfield, Kansas.
Yes.
And he courted her. They courted. and in 1894, the relationship was such that young Gilbert proposed marriage.
He went to Jared.
He did go to Jared, and he asked Jessie for her hand in marriage, and she agreed. So, you know, we got a happy little story here.
Have you ever been courted, Devil?
Yeah.
Have you been courted?
Yeah.
Okay,
have you ever had a suitor?
I had several suitors.
Okay, well, he was a suitor. He was Jessie's suitor.
I never dated anybody named Twig.
Okay, and one more question, and I know we return to this because you never answer a question directly, but much like Nixon, we're going to get to the bottom of this.
I answer directly all the time.
When you was in college playing softball and you had the lesbian thing going on, who was the suitor? I mean, how did you define who the suitor was and who was doing the courting? Did you ever wonder about that?
All the time.
Who's the suitor?
I lay awake at night and wonder.
Here's what you got to ask yourself. Is this something that you really want to ask me at this particular time?
Okay, you know what? Let's skip over that question.
Let's ask this question. If you're slow dancing, who leads?
Yeah.
At this particular time, ask yourself, is it worth it?
Okay. Let's move on. Timmy, tell us some more about Mr. Twig.
Let me proceed. Okay, so they're engaged, right? He and Gilbert and Jesse were engaged, and Jesse was at that point committed to becoming Mrs. Twig.
Well, that's something to
aspire. At last,
that's something to aspire to.
At last,
Jesse's girl.
Jesse's girl. It didn't go well, and for unclear reasons, Mrs. Jesse or Miss Jesse Hamilton broke off the engagement.
She didn't want to be a twig.
I guess she did not want to be a twig. Now, Gilbert did not take this well at all. He was working at Baden Mills. Get back to your point.
Was he a miller?
He was a miller. And he was working.
Or was he a Miller Lite?
But he, well, probably because he didn't work that hard. But he decided at that point when she broke off the engagement, he wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. Well, I guess it's not Dodge.
He should go back to Twig Town.
It's Winfield. He wanted to get out of Winfield.
Should go back to Twig Town.
He did not go back to Twig Town. He did not go back. Instead, he joined the United States Army to be all that he could be.
Oh, good.
He wanted to be a better twig.
Well. They do more before 9 a.m.
They do. So he joined the 8th Cavalry, and he was shipped out, and he was he went to Camp Force in Huntsville, Alabama. Within a year, he became a first-class marksman, and he earned a promotion to corporal. I don't think that's really catapulting, is it?
It's a rocket. It's a rocket.
He's on the fast track.
He was on a career ladder there. He had a career path set.
I was I was in the Boy Scouts, and I swear there was people there had been in there like a year and a half and hadn't got to tenderfoot yet.
Oh, really?
Because I think you had to make like so many different knots.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't.
Did you make it to be a Weeblo?
Were
you a Weeblo?
No, I got to be a... I got to be a was what they just say the word
corporal?
Tenderfoot.
Tenderfoot.
I got to be a tenderfoot, but then I quit because it was like a paramilitary organization, and
it's a cult.
So I started protesting.
Did you?
It was
silently.
It was the early 70s.
Yeah. Well,
silent protest.
So anyway, Twig joins. He joins the army. He's promoted. He's sent. He wanted to go to Cuba. This is during the Spanish-American War. He wanted to go down there and see action, but he was never sent to Cuba. He didn't get down there with Teddy Roosevelt, so he was disappointed and all that. But he was assigned to be one of the early telephone operators in the Army. So isn't that interesting? He got discharged. He moved to New York. And his record in the Army, he had an excellent record of service. But then we sent troops to the Philippines because, in the Spanish-American War, once it was over, the United States acquired the Philippines. And then there were some insurgents over there with the Filipinos trying to get their independence. So we sent troops over there, and Twig re-upped so he could see some action because he really wanted to get in.
Wanted to shoot some shit.
He did. He was still bitter over this
breakup.
Yeah, he's still bitter over this breakup. But he went over to the Philippines. You know, it was hot. It was a lot. It was very hot there. It was terrible conditions. He saw fellow soldiers die along his side. So it was, typical war. And he suffered what today probably would be post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
But at that point, it was not even diagnosed. In the First World War, they had shell. They coined the term shell shock.
Shell shock.
But then they didn't even have that term. So. He had several confrontations with officers and fellow soldiers while he was in the Army the second time, but it was never put on his record because they didn't want to blemish his record.
No.
Now, 3 years after he re-enlisted, into the Army, he was released in 1902. He had catapulted again to the rank of sergeant. When he was flying.
Holy shit.
Well, yeah, he was on the fast
track. Catapulted.
Catapulted.
He was discharged in California. And he had a citation for excellent service. So, he did thank you for your service. He decided then going to back to Winfield, but instead he found work at the Royal Milling Company. Again, he went back to milling. Milling about.
He went to, what a lazy shit.
He moved to Great Falls, Montana, where he worked at the Royal Milling Company for $3 a day.
Oh.
Yeah, he was.
Today, that'd be like $19 a day. Yeah.
The work kept him busy, but he missed Winfield, and more importantly, he missed young Jesse.
I think we established Jesse was over it.
Yeah, I think Jesse.
By now, what's it been, like 6 years?
I think Jesse turned a page, but I think
I think he needs to turn the page.
Yeah. But he's still holding a flame for her. So he decided to move back to Winfield, Kansas. When he moved back to, you know, he was kind of hoping to reunite with Jesse and win back her love. But when he arrived in Winfield, he found out that Jesse had already married someone else and was raising a family up the road in Wichita.
I would bet you Jesse was banging that guy when she was engaged.
It's been like 10 years.
It's been like,
the kids was like 11 three. Years old.
No, he was signed up for three.
Yeah.
When they broke up, and then he re-upped for three.
Yeah. And so then I think it was six. A year in between. So, yeah.
Well, can we just agree she was a whore?
No,
we can't agree to that.
She was not a whore. She moved on with her life. She got married.
She turned the page.
She turned the page.
This some bitch cannot.
He's kind of hanging on.
Women's kind of fickle, you know.
You know what they call that now is obsessive, stalkerish kind of.
Yeah,
crazy shit.
See, I like to call persistence.
Yeah, I know you do.
Now, when he found out that she was married, he was inconsolable. He became a different man after that in the summer of 1903 when he moved back to the small Kansas town of Winfield. He spent his days holed up in his boarding house room and loitering in the town park. His icy eyes flitted to and fro.
I don't know what that even means.
As he whispered conspiratorially to old friends that certain individuals had rigged the world against him. He sounds like Donald Trump there.
Well, you know, doesn't mean they're not after him.
Just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean there's not someone out to get you.
Exactly.
So what happens next, Brandy?
Well, I will tell you, Tim.
Thank you.
Sure. On August 1st, 1903, Twig visited a hardware store. He bought himself a shotgun, a .32 pistol, and more than 100 rounds of ammo. There was nothing unusual about the gun purchase.
Yeah, wouldn't that raise some flags?
Evidently, well, not if you're hunting your food and shit.
I guess.
The Daily Courier would report after the fact, but when Twig started choosing his ammunition, it aroused the curiosity of the store's owner, W.D. Winfield, standing close by to watch the sale. What you gonna do with that kind of shell? Winfield asked. I picture Wilford Brimley.
W.D. Winfield makes you think of Wilford Brimley.
Yeah.
And Twig said he hadn't decided yet. Before Twig left the store, he bought one additional item, a .32 Harrington and Richards pistol, a cheap gun, comparatively, and it didn't cost any more than $5. So over the next week or so, while he's holed up with his eyes flitting to and fro, he's refining his plan.
Now, if they would have done a background check on him, he would have passed.
Oh, sure. Sure. With flying colors.
His exceptional service in the military.
His rocket trajectory career.
Yeah. But I think that any time a person comes into a gun store with flitty eyes.
You can't trust flitty eyes.
What kind of eyes?
Flitty. You can't trust flitty eyes.
No, you can't.
You know what the hell it is.
I have a hard time trusting flitty scent.
I like flitty. 50 Cent lost a lot of weight. He's in a movie where he's playing.
You know what? 50 Cent pissed me off when he made fun of that kid at the airport. So.
Yeah, that wasn't cool. But he's in a movie now where he's playing this character with cancer, and he lost like 60 pounds.
So there's a kid at the airport who's autistic, and he was working. He was just doing his job. And 50 Cent comes up there with his camera rolling, like harassing this kid, talking about how he's on drugs and... carrying on.
Did he know he was autistic?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's not cool.
No, but still. So he's talking about how he was on drugs, how he was, you know, whatever, and then posted it to his Facebook page or whatever.
That's not cool.
Instagram or whatever it is.
I mean, even if the dude was on drugs, if you're a celebrity, you don't have to find something else to pick on.
And this guy's a kid. I mean,
we got a guy running for president who did that.
Well,
it's apparently okay to do that in this country now.
I know. No, it's not ever okay.
It's okay for me to do it.
You know,
But yeah, that's all right. It's okay for me to make fun of people.
So, back to Twigtastic here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gilbert. He bought more shotgun shells. He stored them in a trunk in his room. He continued to just wander around the city parks, muttering aloud about the young lady who jilted him all those years ago, following him from place to place, even all the way to the Philippines. What the hell did that just say?
He couldn't forget her.
He couldn't forget her, and yeah. Whatever. He took out wads of cash from the local banks, designating two $300 drafts each payable to his brothers, then living in Pennsylvania. 12 days later, he pulled his armaments in a tin wagon and waited in the alley until townspeople had gathered for the weekly concert at the town square.
Now, Timmy, can I just interrupt for 1 second? Would you... the only thing I can figure is that the woman had exceptional oral skills.
Oh, my God.
I mean, what would make
you... Or could it be that he's just crazy?
Oh, no, I mean...
He probably got under that petticoat.
Yeah. Or she might have just done freaky things. Who knows? I mean... No, I mean, every once in a while you run into a woman and you think, you know, not many women can do these kind of things.
No, I would like to remind you she has not had caffeine or tobacco.
Why? See, now, we're all walking on eggshells because of the devil.
Yes.
I will stab you in the face with my pen.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be like the third time.
Well, then you think you'd learn.
No.
All right. So, Twig went over to his Uncle Argyle's house, whatever, in his Aunt Bab's house. He didn't stay long. He didn't say anything about his plans. Still, Argyle, whatever, noticed the shotgun in the buckskin suit. What?
He
thought his nephew might have gone hunting. He's wearing a buckskin suit.
He's styling.
Is he walking around with a deer head for a hood?
Well, the thing is, too, this is August, I think. In July. This is in August.
So. I'm like, what? I don't understand when he had a buckskin suit.
You think it's hot out there.
Are they chaps?
On the prairie?
Yeah.
I've wore chaps before. Have you wore the chapless? Have you wore chapless like without any other pants?
I got the crotchless chaps.
Yeah,
all chaps are crotchless. You dick.
Huh?
All chaps are crotchless.
No,
do you do that for Renee? You wear that on special occasions.
Well, and I don't like to kiss and tell, Timmy. You know that.
Yeah.
But Mrs. Colonel, she liked the Batman outfit.
Oh my God! Okay, so
every once in a while, hold on.
So you've got a buck.
Wait a minute. Let's
every
see
once in
goes.
A while.
I will be outside. I don't want to be on this train.
I will see in my house. She's got this little thing she puts on the lamp, and I'll be watching Sports Center or whatnot. And she puts this little piece of paper, or a piece of hard cardboard, or whatever, over the top of the lamp. And the bat signal shows up on the ceiling.
No, it's not a bat. Mm-hmm. It actually just says, get the fuck out of here.
I have to run to the closet, slide, get my outfit on, because Mrs. Colonel, what does she want, Timmy?
She wants the crotchless chaps.
The bat pole.
The crotchless chaps.
What about...
She's wanting the bat pole.
Does she ever dress you up in, like, loincloth?
Every once in a while. But you know what I don't like about that?
What?
Is the swinging from the ceiling part.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Does she ever buy you, like the underwear that's got, the elephant trunk on it?
No, I don't have that. I don't have that. She's a tasteful woman, too.
You know what? Renee is actually halfway classy, and you just run her through the shitter all the time.
She is actually very, very sweet.
She's awesome, and you're just such a rat bastard.
Well, she don't listen to the show, so I can say
whatever I want.
I'm going
to make
sure
she listens to something. All right. So later, his uncle wondered if he should have said something about Gilbert's instability, but he didn't think his nephew posed a danger, and so he didn't want to tell him.
Yeah, well, you know.
He didn't want to say anything.
See something, say something. That's what I say.
Well, right. According to various newspaper reports, somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 people packed the intersection between 9th and Main that Thursday night, August 13th. An impressive figure, as Winfield's population barely topped 5,500 at the time. So everybody in town was there.
Yeah.
Because Winfield, believe it or not, was not a happening place.
Well, it was because they had a band that was going to play.
Well, they do, but that's it. Like, well, yeah. So now you're at the place. Right. But other than that, there's not a lot going on.
Right, right. It was a, yeah.
It's does not it, like they could, they were hitting the titty bar in the outside right, of town or right. anything like that.
Does anybody like parades?
I love a parade. Yeah. The beat of the drum?
Yeah, yeah. All those things. I don't remember the words, but yeah.
I do not like parades.
I like the parades where they throw candy.
I like the parades where they throw candy and the kids run out and almost, it's like.
And then almost die.
It's like the Hunger Games where they're going out to try to.
Yeah.
Well, they jump in front of the other
horses and things.
Yeah, for a piece of bubble gum. Yeah.
But you know what? That's, you got to be ready. If you're going to go out there, you go balls out or go home.
Well, yeah.
If you can't handle it.
No.
If you're three and you can't get there and back in some kind of time.
I
love it when like an adult will grab the candy in front of the kid.
Oh, I know. Fuckers. All right, so blah, 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 blah.
Okay, so the band is getting ready. So the band's getting ready. It's going to be a big night. There's going to be a hot time in the old town tonight.
Yes. So the band was led by W.H. Kamen. And
very talented, by the way. A very talented musician, I might add.
Okay, well, the band had good reason to expect a large crowd. They had been entertaining similar crowds the prior year with brass renditions of pieces like The Calvary Charge and The Comic Tattoo, two personal favorites of mine.
One of my favorites is In a Good Old Summertime.
And they were just coming off a successful trip to Washington, D.C.
Okay, so they're out touring.
I don't know what The Comic Tattoo is, but you should write that down.
Okay, they're out touring. It's a summer
tour. They're doing their summer tour.
Yeah.
The summer park tour. So on the evening of August 13th, Kamen and his band started without reason to suspect any impending catastrophe. When the band called for intermission, the crowd was milling about.
I mill about sometimes.
I know.
I mill about quite often.
I don't know what noising.
Especially 9 to 5, you mill about quite often.
Yeah.
I don't know what noising about is.
Well, they were chatting.
That is
perhaps
a word there.
It's probably inappropriate.
A group of boys saw the man with the gun creep up a nearby alley. Mm-hmm. He was wearing dark pants and a khaki buckskin coat. Nothing says incognito like a buckskin coat
right.
in summer.
In Kansas.
Despite the stealthy way he slithered up the alley, he moved with the confidence of one at ease with his plan.
Well, remember, he was a marksman in the Army, and he had served in the Philippines.
So. Yes. The boys did not sense that confidence at first, nor did they see the gun right away, or the look in his blue eyes. Flitty, I bet. I bet it was Flitty.
They used to call him Crazy Gilbert in town. Well, I don't know if I have that in there, but...
You don't.
Yeah, and they did.
So
he was kind of an oddball around town.
Well, sure. Let's see. Inside an alley right near Milligan's, the boys finally saw the man's gun. One or two of them actually might have known who he was. They might have heard their elders call him Crazy Twig.
Crazy Twig.
Yeah. Like Crazy Train, but different.
I mean, every little neighborhood has someone that's a little
odd. Oh, we had Pecos, yeah.
And we've got Charles.
Yeah, we do.
No, we had a kid up, Forsey.
Forsey.
His name was Forrest, but his brothers were all slow-witted. They could not say Forrest. So they called him Forsey, and you could get Forsey. Forsey was one of those kids always in trouble in school, always in a fight.
Could you see Forrest for the trees?
Yeah. He was only about 4 foot tall.
So, no.
You could get the boy to do anything. Anything you could get him to do. So, yeah, he was. We had a lot of fun with Forsey.
Okay. So you had a strange dude in your neighborhood, too.
Yeah, and I believe Forsey is actually, I'm sure he's out now, but when he was about 16 years old.
Sure, he's out now. It doesn't sound good.
Forsey used to go up to the auto dealer that we had in our little town, and he would take a set of keys out of the car during the day, and he'd come back and drive to. He was only about 14 years old.
That's kind of small.
He'd do this forever until finally he wrecked one, and he would wreck them quite often, but he'd run away. But this particular wreck, he could not get out of because he was injured. And
so he did some time in a big house.
He did some time in a big house for that. And
they sent the 14-year-old up the river.
No, he was about 17 at that time, but they did send him up the river as an adult.
So these boys,
you got the anal pack.
You got quite the packing.
So these boys are kind of half-assed following this guy, trying to figure out what he's doing.
Gilbert.
Gilbert Grape. So they're following him. They're trying to figure out what he's doing. And evidently, he got the drop on him and was right, you know, came up to them before they saw him, before they noticed him. And he stared down at the one little boy and he said, "I'm going to do some tall shooting, son. And you'd better run, as I have no desire to hurt you."
Oh, no.
But someone tell you they're going to do some tall shooting, it's time to move on.
Well, and this is where I think that, you know, but the boys, yeah, they didn't run. They just kind of stood there.
You don't have to tell me twice you're going to do
some
tall shooting.
That's what I'm saying. But then the man raised his firearm. He chose the 12-gauge double-barrel shotgun and said, "I wonder if I can hit Cayman."
Cayman being
the band leader.
Right.
Hearing the band leader's name, the boys snapped out of their trance as the man dropped to his left knee and pointed his shotgun and cried, "I'll kill every one of you." They ran as fast as they could. They ran as shots rang out and confusion propagated amongst the large crowd.
Propagate? Timmy, you're using those big words. Your vocabulary is becoming more impressive.
You like those multi-syllable words.
It's more and more prolific.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Why? Because, you know, my parents, and I love my mom, and I love my dad, but they're very conservative when it comes to syllables. They only gave me two.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
They did.
I'm glad they gave me a lot. I mean, I'm glad I have two, because, I mean, Cher, she only has one.
Right.
But, you know, Tim Scott, that's it. Very conservative.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Twig fired at Cayman.
Which isn't a fair battle. If you only have a baton... If you have a baton, every guy's got a rifle. Well,
so, for whatever reason...
Don't take a baton to a gunfight.
No. No. But I don't know why. So, Cayman is the object of his, you know, apparent ire. So, he shoots at Cayman, and the shot hit a horse.
now, that's crossing a goddamn line.
It sounds like
there.
It grazed over its back, and the animal reared its hind legs and roared away. Then he fired again straight at the bandstand. That shot hit Ree Oliver, the military band's drummer, going through his shoulder and abdomen.
Well, now you have no beat at all.
No, you won't. The beat does not go on.
No.
But as my son tells me all the time, who's in the band, drummers are a dime a dozen.
Okay. Well, probably not now. But anyway, "I'm shot, boys," Oliver cried and fell over. But Cayman did not hear him and shouted the rest of the band to sit down.
Sit your ass down.
And continued to pass out sheet music for the next set.
Well, you know, you got to turn the page.
The show must go on.
Must go on. We got a whole another set to do.
So, but the thing is, the bullets keep coming. One of them passed through Clyde Wagner's bass horn and shattered the instrument.
Well, now you're in percussions. Now you've got problems.
Well, there's repercussions from shooting percussion.
They really are.
His injuries were serious, but they weren't fatal.
What the fuck? It didn't go straight down the thing into his mouth or something?
No, but the horn's destruction alerted Kanan that something was happening.
Was amiss.
Yeah.
Something was amiss.
Something's off.
The horn section seems a little flat.
So, yeah. So every time Twig fired, he had to take a step back to compensate for the shotgun's recoil. He dropped to one knee each time and fired again. See, that's why I don't like these things. Okay.
I'm sorry. I know it's... there's.
No, I don't... No, but what I don't like is it's just the randomness of it. I don't get it.
I know.
So, six shots hit William Bowman. He was a farmer from Oxford, a city like 10 miles away, who was just hanging out there in front of the Winfield National Bank. Bog, as his friends called him, fell near the steps. I don't know what that word is. I can't even like make up what that what I think that word might be.
Fusillade. The fusillade.
Okay.
It's kind of it's like a deck. Something like that.
Of gunfire?
Oh, a fusillade of gunfire. A hail of gunfire.
Okay. I don't know why we can't.
Okay, listen. Okay, remember you can put the big words in my section, Timmy. Trying to keep the big words out of her
section.
They
need to be phonetic. First of all, I'm just fine with the big words.
Okay.
All right, so...
A hail of gunfire. A
hail of gunfire, forcing him up and then down to the ground. Blood and brains pooling around what remained of his head, and he died instantly. Ugh. Nearby, Everett Ridgway took three shots to his back. 22-year-old Port Smith was shot in the head, the bullet lodging in his brain. He died after being transported to the Holcomb and Boyle Hospital. Dawson Biltier, a 23-year-old barber, stood near the front corner of Craig's bookstore when he was hit. Shots passed through his neck and bowels. He lived about a half hour, spending his last half-conscious minutes mumbling to those who had rushed to him that he lived on East 10th Street.
You take one in the throat and bowels. See, that's particularly nasty because if you recover from one... Let's say that you recover from the throat one. Now you've
got a bag.
You're shitting into a bag.
Yeah.
But if you recover from the bowel one
even had
and not the throat one, you're on a liquid diet. I mean, that's a particularly... This was a vile man.
Wow.
But apparently he wanted to be taken home because he was giving him a home address.
Right.
And, you know, and it's a small town. It's in the middle of the prairie. So, you know, the hospital there is probably not equipped to handle mass casualties.
Not this, no. Let's see. Arthur Hansford was visiting from West Virginia. He took a shot to the hand. Biltier died on the street. Link Smith sat in the southwest corner of 9th and Manning. He'd heard Twig's first shot and began to run towards the middle of 9th, where he found his aunt, Sally Milligan. She'd seen the muzzle flash, but curiously felt no fear of the shooter. J.P. Milligan, Sally's husband and Smith's uncle, moved to the doorway of his shoe shop. Without realizing, he stood directly in front of Gilbert Twig. Smith saw his uncle from across the street and ran towards him, momentarily forgetting Twig was still shooting. Twig, seeing Smith, fired a fast, deliberate shot. A few buckshot pellets passed through Smith's coat sleeve. Once he reached his uncle, Link asked for a gun to take the shooter down. Milligan refused. There you go. Don't do it. Link ignored his uncle and ran upstairs where he hoped a gun might be stashed in the room of one of the boarders.
Yeah, here's a story that we, you know, you always hear about, well, if people were armed, they could fight back. Here's a story where they actually did.
Yeah.
Let's see. Link didn't find a gun or anything upstairs. Twig reloaded his shotgun, and at that moment, four men rushed down the stairs of the Odd Fellows Hall, situated just above Craig's bookstore. Its exit next to the shoe shop was right in Twig's line of sight. Sight.
I'm imagining there was a lot of lines of shite in that parade.
Right.
Yeah. I bet everyone was shiting then.
All right. So one volley of gunfire took out three of the men. Sterling Race, Elmer Farnsworth, and J.B. Story. Race died only after a few minutes. Farnsworth, who owned Winfield's cigar store, lived... till about 8:30 the following evening. Story took a bullet to his elbow and side, but the wounds were not fatal. The bullets entirely missed the fourth man, James Galloway. At this point, Twig fired the gun's second barrel. He first hits Otis Carter, a janitor with the Oddfellows, who had just emerged from the stairwell. Carter took two shots, with one to the temple proving to be the fatal one the next morning. 16-year-old Roy Davis was also in the line of fire. 8 buckshot pellets pierced his neck and bowels. Earlier that day, Davis had run into Twig as he wandered and mumbled around Island Park carrying his shotgun. Then Twig had pushed the boy away, threatening to shoot him if he didn't follow orders. After the second encounter, with Twig and his shotgun, Davis bled out on the street and died within minutes. Twig stepped back, reloaded, and fired some more. The next shot hit 3 women: Miss Jonathan Brooks, Elizabeth Ballard, and Florence Gregg.
Now that's just cowardly.
Both Ballard and Gregg were wounded in the neck. Gregg also suffered some hand and leg injuries. The shooter swung around to the south end of the bandstand. Will Moore was severely wounded from a shot to the left thigh, while Big Bill Coachman ended up with a pellet in his shoulder. Jim Clarkson was also hit, a pellet entering his right arm and another shot passing through his side and into his bowels. There's a lot of bowel shooting here. Subsequent shots hit William Wilkins and Charles Thomas in their knees, Clyde Reed in his hip and kidneys, and Sam Compton in his leg. Still more men suffered serious injuries. Elmer Urey took one to the wrist. H.E. Williams broke his wrist. Jake Simpson got hit in the chest. Al Shoup got hit in the leg. Artie Carter in the foot. And John Armstrong in the leg. As bodies crumpled and revelers bolted in panic, Twig calmly paused 3 times to reload. Several men rushed him, but he dropped them with buckshot. The big pellets found the flesh of some 40 people, from wealthy merchants to town paupers, a farmer, a plasterer, a barber, and a schoolboy.
And a candlestick maker.
Right. After 5 minutes of instigating terror, Crazy Twig set down the 12-gauge and grabbed his 6-shooter from the wagon. By the time it was over, the whole thing took perhaps 20 minutes. Jesus Christ.
That's a long time.
6 were killed, including the shooter. 3 more died over the next few days. 25 suffered injuries of varying seriousness.
Did he have a double? Did it say if he had a double barrel shotgun?
He had a double barrel shotgun.
Because those you got to reload every 2 shots.
He was well armed.
Yeah, but a double barrel shotgun, you give off 2 shots, it takes you a good 10, 15 seconds easy to reload.
He's just in the middle of town square just firing away.
Yeah, no, I mean, if he was really thinking this through, he would have gone with a pump.
Well, I don't think like that, he was, a pump shotgun. You know, probably not thinking it through.
And more than a 6 shooter, but...
But there was some controversy on what happened to Mr. Twig.
Who killed Gilbert Twig?
Well,
what happened to Gilbert Greg?
Who killed Gilbert? That's the question of the day here.
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people think he killed himself.
Some people believe he killed himself because when the shooting was over, he was dead with a gunshot wound to his head.
Mm-hmm.
And the question remained, who killed him? Was it suicide or was he killed by the town's night watchman, George Nichols?
Did they not have police in this town?
They did, but, you know, they were, I don't know. They wasn't, apparently they weren't available.
Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky, too.
Let's talk about this night watchman. What's his name?
George Nichols.
Okay.
All right,
tell me about him.
Well, here's the most important thing about George Nichols,
mm-hmm.
is that he was black.
African-American in Kansas in 1903.
And in that time, in 1903, black men did not kill white men, even if the white man was a raging lunatic shooting at other people. Now, the local coroner, Walter Cooper, had an inquest on Friday, and Sheriff Marcus Day, Argo Twig, and other people testified to what they saw the night before. Night watchman George Nichols told the inquest that he heard Gilbert Twig's final shot and found him dying in an alley of a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, he wouldn't even take credit for it.
No. When the testimony concluded, the jury ruled that Twig's death was a result of suicide from a .32 shot to the head. And for more than a century, the people of Winfield grew up believing Nichols played a more active role in Twig's death. And again, this all comes from the fact that Nichols could not make himself out to be a hero, because it was just too dangerous for a black man to kill a white man, even if they had justification.
Yeah, even if the white man is shooting up the whole town.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, you're not the good guy with a gun. You're just a black guy with
a
gun.
Right.
And it would have, you know, they would who knows what would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert P. Davis, he studied the massacre extensively, and he speculated further, and he said, other than the coroner's inquest, no other investigation of the episode seems to have been conducted. Davis wrote this in 2001. Twig was found with a wound, air caps around that,
mm-hmm.
or air quotes. Was it a .32 caliber close-range wound surrounded by powder bones, or was it a .44, which Nichols was carrying, fired from a distance? Nichols was carrying both his Winchester rifle and a .44 caliber revolver. Maybe the wound came from some different size weapon fired from an alternate distance. No note of this has ever come to light. Nichols denied the rumor almost as soon as it began. Its origin was a wire report only a few hours after the massacre, stating Nichols confronted Twig and fired a bullet into his head. But before life was extinct, the demented man drew a revolver from his pocket and fired a shot into his own head. So, and according to that report...
That's the official report.
The official report showed two gunshot wounds to the head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hindsight and great understanding of the rush of inaccurate, conflicting statements, and you know when these things happen, there's always, confusion.
The early reports are often wrong.
Yeah. So, anyway... It's similar to what happens, you know, today. Mm-hmm. So, one other point, buttresses.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you got me with a big word there.
See?
Buttresses the
Just
truth
put him
of
in my
Nichols.
Script.
Well, I'm not expecting this from him. Of Nichols' vociferous denials and silences.
Jesus Christ, in Italy.
The rumor mongers. His shooting 17 years after Twig's massacre of the man who killed a fellow. Okay, one other point buttresses the truth of Nichols' vociferous denials and silences the rumor mongers. His shooting,
mm-hmm.
17 years after Twig's massacre, of the men who killed a fellow police officer, and the general positive media coverage and attention toward Nichols for this justifiable homicide.
So
17 years later, he killed somebody else who killed a policeman.
Yeah, he was the hero twice.
Yeah, he was. This is a bad son of a bitch, is George Nichols.
Yeah.
So when
it's just too bad he didn't get credit. You know, couldn't take credit for it because he was African American.
Yeah. Now he died in '44, and an unnamed friend said, reflecting the general esteem. The town quoted an unnamed friend as George Nichols reflecting the general esteem among the town of Winfield.
They liked him.
If everyone was as good as George, we wouldn't need a police force. If everybody was as good a shot as George, you wouldn't need a police force. You just need George.
But the people understood that he was actually the hero of that event and the later event that you mentioned.
He was only buried 100 yards away from Gilbert Twig.
That's interesting. If you look at there, you can go to find a grave and on the internet, and there's a photo of his tombstone, and right next to it is Twig's. They're very next to each other. That's weird.
Now, after the massacre, the reporters reported a palmist visited Twig's body.
A palmist.
Not yet buried.
Have you ever went to a palm reader, Brandy?
Sure.
I went to one. You know Carla, our friend Carla from the page. We went to one. Me and her went to one on December 30th. I forget what year. We went to a palm reader. She read our palms, and she told us that we'd be going to a party. She saw us at a party.
Did she?
Yeah, this is the day before New Year's Eve.
Oh, so...
And you know what the sad part is?
What?
We never got invited to a party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So she was shooting fish in a barrel and she still missed.
Exactly. Have you ever had? No, seriously, Brandy, have you been to a palm reader before?
Mm-hmm.
What have you? Did you find them accurate?
She wasn't bad.
Really?
She wasn't bad. You got to be very careful. You know, don't give them anything.
Right. Don't want to tip them off.
But she's.
She was pretty good.
She was pretty good.
Well, I know you do all that Satan worshiping and stuff, but you've been to where you call them, is it pagan conventions or
just gone to orgies?
Well, I know that. I'm being serious here. What are they called when they're? Is it, you know, the witchcraft when they come in and they have a little convention? Didn't you go? Tell me you went to one of those before.
The Victory of Light thing, the psychic fair.
Oh, a psychic fair. Yeah. How was that?
That was fun.
Yeah. Okay.
That was fun.
Have you ever been to the Renaissance Festival?
No. Have you ever had an out-of-body experience?
No.
Have you, Colonel?
An out-of-body experience? Uh-huh. I have had, as close as I've had to an out-of-body experience, I was one time driving on the highway, and a truck, and the driver looked strangely like the devil, 18-wheeler, forced me off the road. It was pouring down rain, and I got into the grass in a little culvert between, and I was headed right toward oncoming traffic the other way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a 275 interstate here. Mm-hmm. And as I was sliding across this grass and headed toward, it seemed to me that I was more beside the car watching what was going to happen.
Like in slow motion?
And my life did not pass in front of my eyes. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I thought was two things. I had two thoughts in this time period. Was that I hope somebody saw. I knew for some reason I was going to hit a van full of blind children and kill them all head on and look like it was my fault. So I hoped very much that there were witnesses showing this truck. What he did was turned left and didn't see me. Mm-hmm. And I was in the left-hand lane. Mm-hmm. So I hope very much that people saw that and would say it was the truck's fault, not mine.
Did you survive?
The other thing that I thought was, this is really going to hurt when I hit. This is really going to hurt. Well, I was able to keep my car under control and not go into the traffic, and I was able to stay in the culvert.
So you threaded the needle.
So I did thread that needle, but it was very strange in that it appeared to me that everything was happening in slow motion, and I was actually beside my car watching this happen. I would not say that was a paranormal experience. It was just a strange experience.
You had so much anxiety that your body just, your mind decided to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now, right, I'm sorry, go ahead and continue.
Well, this palmist, she read his palm and failed to find any indications of insanity.
And just said Gilbert Craig.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that lines indicating extreme morbidness and a tendency to murder, vengeance, and violent death were plainly marked. Let me see your hand here, devil.
Well, isn't that kind of, closing the barn door after the horse ran out? Yeah. You're reading a dead man's palm. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, would you still hold your hand out there, devil? I want to see if you got the same lines.
I don't think you want to see her hand.
Because,
You might see the palm of her hand before this podcast.
I probably will. Let's just take this completely out of context, Timmy.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to say some words, and we're going to do some free association here, okay?
All right.
And
is this with me or with Brandon?
With you. And tell me what comes to mind. The first thing that comes to mind after I say this.
Uh-huh.
A tendency to murder.
Brandy.
Vengeance.
Brandy.
Okay. Morbidness, violent death.
Brandy.
Okay. Just checking. Okay.
Really?
So anyway...
Well, I mean that in the, nicest possible way.
There's no judgment. That was a scientific experiment.
Yeah, I was word association.
You know what I was thinking? A scientific experiment. So if I take this,
this being a pin.
Yeah. So let's see how long it takes to pop the eardrum if you put it in the ear, in Chuck's ear.
Okay.
How much pressure it would take to pop that right on through there.
That would fall under the extreme morbidness we
just
talked about.
That is a scientific experiment.
Well, it depends how much earwax. You have to figure out the earwax.
It's a scientific experiment.
Yeah, the earwax to ink ratio.
It could impact it.
Now, getting back to this lady, Jessie Hamilton, the woman who chose not to marry Gilbert, was really the mess of this. And when you look at most
problems,
horrible things that have happened in the world,
There's
usually a woman behind it.
Oh, you say, well, it wasn't her fault. She just didn't want to marry the guy.
No, I'm going to blame Jesse for this.
Okay, what happened to Jesse?
Sure, clearly it's her fault.
She never spoke to the newspapers about the massacre.
But she went on to be somewhat of a, has lived somewhat an important life.
Well, nor do we know what, if anything, she knew about the last terrible acts of her former fiancé. But as Hamilton had moved with her husband to Wichita after the wedding in August 1900, they still visited Winfield on occasion afterward. It's likely she did know and understandably did not want to discuss it. Instead, Hamilton thereafter, Miss Ernest Kramer, led Jesse an Kramer. Exemplary life as a prostitute.
No, that's not true.
Okay, but it makes for a better story.
No, she had a very steam life. What did she do?
She was a mother of five children.
Mm-hmm.
She was a soprano soloist with a church choir, which there was only six people in the church by, so anybody could have done that. And so active in the burgeoning suffragist movement. Jesus Christ, what are you doing to us here, Timmy?
I'm telling you.
Burgeoning suffragist movement. That she was honored in March 1917 for taking a prominent part in the work of establishing women's suffrage in Kansas. Which, don't you always think women's suffrage, that's women's freedom, but it sounds so much like women's suffering.
Yeah.
It's kind of like men's suffering.
It is men's suffering. And, you know, she's one of those women.
She was very active in the women's movement to vote.
And I'm all for women having
the right to vote?
Not the right to vote. I don't believe that. Huh. Because they're wasted. And owning property. Why shouldn't they own property?
Uh-huh. You now, don't think they should or they should?
Well, I think they should not because, like, my house,
uh-huh.
Okay?
It's your castle.
Is my castle, and I should be the king of that castle. And but somehow,
who owns your house?
Who's paid for your house?
Well,
who's the breadwinner?
Technically, the deed says Mrs. Colonel.
Okay, so let's look at the numbers here. Let's compare your salary to Renee's salary.
Okay,
there's no comparison.
Three times as much,
probably.
Okay, continue, Colonel.
That be it as it may.
You wear the pants.
And she's better looking.
Despite the disparity in our earning potential.
I'm sure you make it up in dong.
I do make it up in servicing, Timmy.
Really?
I have to work hard.
He was going to say it.
I got to work hard to keep that three times salary.
Yeah.
So, and you would not believe the dirty things she makes me do, Timmy.
Yeah, like roll over and leave her the fuck alone.
that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But now, 4 years later, Miss Jessie Kramer was the first woman juror to serve in a Wichita criminal case. Again, why are women on juries? Because you know they always.
No, I mean she was
kind of a big deal.
She was kind of a big deal, and her sister. I don't think I put it in her, Colonel, but her sister was the first woman to appear in a civil. Serve as a juror in a civil trial.
So they were litigious women.
They were very litigious.
You know what? And this is why you end up with people like Nicola Reed.
Why? Yeah.
You let women become litigious.
They broke down barriers.
Now, thank goodness we got Nicola because she has keeping me out of jail.
Yes. So see, these were women who she a great accomplishment.
She will also keep me out of jail. Just remember that.
See, I got a little bit of problem because I got Shannon taking care of the money, and Shannon is a shady, shady woman.
You know, just leave some notes about you speaking to the Satan or something before you do it, so that you can get.
It'll make a good podcast.
Yeah, you know, criminal defense. You get off on the insanity defense.
I will talk to my lawyer about that.
Continue, Colonel.
Here's one thing that was interesting because somebody said if the city, about the shooting,
mm-hmm.
If the city had been provided with electric lights, one man said to the Daily Free Press the morning after the mass shooting, the murderer would have fired but two shots. The poorly lighted streets made the terrible deed possible.
Yeah, this is 1903. I mean, there were electricity. Some of the cities had on the East Coast had lights, but
I'm believing it made. Well, I guess you're just shooting into a crowd, so it makes it easier. But I mean, you can see the.
If you ever shot
a double barrel shotgun or a 12 gauge shotgun,
you can see the flash.
There's quite a flame that comes out of that at the end. It's kind of like when the devil stares at you, the flames that come out of her eyes.
Come out of her eyes or coming out of her whatever.
Her whatever, yeah.
Easy.
She had flames shooting out of her eyes or her whatever. Anyway, tourists still come every September to the annual Bluegrass Festival. Now, the coffee is excellent at College Hill Coffee. To me, you got a deal going on the side here.
Some of those stores are still there. That's the point. Some of them are still there.
Okay, yeah, I believe you're getting a little kickback here, but now close to Southwestern.
Product placement in the podcast.
Yeah. And Southwestern College is still Winfield's only institution of higher learning.
That's sad.
And the Winfield National Bank, now simply Corner Bank, remains at its perch on 9th and Main. Any trace of bullet holes in the window disappeared long ago, but they were around as late as 1927. That's some slow workmanship. That's like at my house on Gisborough. Yeah, I'll fix that in 24 years. Now, the lack of electric lights is one of the many what-ifs and easy scapegoats of the massacre on 9th and Main. More pressing ones concern Gilbert Twiggs' mental health. Was his increased paranoid behavior not taken seriously enough? Because back in the day, back then, and even today,
people just mark it off to someone
walking around,
and you just kind of ignore them and get away from them. They come up to you and slobber on you or whatever. You just
let it go.
And you know, a lot of it is to do with these people being deinstitutionalized,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a bigger problem. But when you have people, and I'll tell you the people that are scary. And let's do
our listeners.
They're scary as hell. Let's do another free association.
Okay.
Functionally insane.
Brandy.
There we go. Okay. So anyway.
I just said the first thing come to my mind.
Really?
So the lack of electric lights. But anyway, it wasn't taken seriously enough. Now, the vocabulary we have now to describe Gilbert's actions differs from the way witnesses and reporters described what happened in the hours, days, and weeks thereafter. Was like maniac and demented and terrible shock of the tragedy were the newspaper's favorites back then, because in 1903, America had little concept of someone plotting, then carrying out a mass shooting. There is evidence that Twiggs was not the first American massacre, but the first of its particular nature.
Yeah, it was the first one where for someone just randomly, for no reason, shooting up the town.
Yeah.
Like I said, today it's a common occurrence, but at the time, you just didn't see it.
Now, the first, known as the Mountain Meadows Massacre, was a coordinated series of attacks by members of the Utah Territorial Militia under a group of immigrants from 4 Arkansas counties. 120 people died, 17 under the age of 7 were spared.
Yeah, but again, this is
but
a
that
political.
Was,
it's a
that
political.
Was a political thing, right? Yeah. Now, the later attack by Robert Charles in New Orleans stemmed from a false arrest of black men by racist police officers and launched protests in the city.
So that was a racial thing.
That was a racial. And still another took place on April 11, 1982, when Will Reynolds, a 35-year-old African-American, killed 7 white men, including the sheriff and 5 deputies in Tuscumbia, Alabama, in retaliation over an old warrant for his arrest.
He shot the sheriff and the deputies.
He fought the law, and the law lost. And in that case, I mean...
Yeah. And then, you know, the one that comes to mind is the Charles Whitman in Texas, the Texas Tower, University of Texas Tower
that
shooting.
Nut job.
UNRRA from New Jersey, Camden, New Jersey. It went down, walked down Main Street and shot people. And then... all of those situations, and those 3 anyway, they were former military. But in UNRRA and in Whitman's case, in UNRRA, I think he served in conflict, but Whitman didn't. Whitman served stateside. But this guy sounds like may have been like the first one who suffering from post-traumatic stress and went off and shot over. I mean, they didn't have the term then, but today we would say he was probably suffering from post-traumatic stress.
So the Winfield Massacre...
But he was kind of nuts before he went in the Army. I mean, he was obsessive-compulsive over that woman.
Yeah.
He was obsessive.
Yeah.
Although, again, maybe she had special skills that we do not know about.
You know, turn the page. Go on to Tinder. Meet someone else.
That's what
they did not have the Tinder and the Craigslist in that back then.
Back page?
I don't even...
Back page? They have back page in Colonel?
I... I believe you had to get on. Now,
Lonely Hearts Club.
They had party lines, Timmy.
Oh, did they?
They had party lines.
Yeah, and you could pick up the phone.
And you never knew who you was going to get on that other line. And they might, you pick it up at 4 in the morning, you might get somebody that's a little frisky, too.
Yeah.
She probably got petticoats and not.
I think they had those phones where you had to crank them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you had to
call
ask,
Sarah, the operator.
Had to ask Maggie.
Yeah. Okay, Colonel. Anything else?
Well, the Winfield Massacre is seemingly indiscriminate in its choice of victims and all but forgotten outside of the town, eerily foreshadows subsequent mass shootings so well known that we can name them by city. We got San Ysidro, Killeen, Columbine, Tucson, Aurora, Sandy Hook, Santa Barbara, Roseburg, Orlando. Mm. I mean, just name them off, there's a mass shooting there. Scores of innocent people arbitrarily dead because of the murderous actions of men, and they're almost always men. Yeah, women kill one at a time.
You don't see many women doing that.
No. And even women who are mass murderers, and there's some exceptions, but most of the women who are mass murderers, a lot of them poison people.
They're poisonous.
Yeah.
And poisoners are the most deviant of all killers.
And they're not, and, you know, we don't do a lot of podcasts on them because it's just not creepy enough. I mean, it's creepy, but...
They're not even interesting.
Yeah, it's not as interesting as someone to go in and shoot up a town square.
But all, and you know,
but you're right, they're more devious because they don't have to have that physical contact.
All these men are all, you know, when we're
talking
about...
All they have to do is, you know, set out their Pop-Tarts and just wait for the...
Yeah.
Wait for the, you know...
The guilty party to fall over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a little Claritin in a Pop-Tart, and all of a sudden, next thing you know...
Dip in Benadryl,
next thing you know, you got a riderless ostrich pulling a cart down the street. And now, and this is true. All these people, you know, when you go into these, you know, these cities I just named, these are all people who have very, very peculiar behavior. And not to get, you know, this is a show we try to stay away from politics and everything else. And you know my feelings on gun control. I mean, I think we should have very strict gun control, and I own a lot of guns. But the peculiar thing is when we focus on these things, these are people who, for the most part, all got guns legally, you know, and if we change the laws the way that they want, you know, they're saying to change them, these people would have still had the guns.
Yeah, I mean,
even
it's kind of like that again. You're closing the barn door after the
because mental health is so hard to. I mean, unless you get somebody
that's
committed against their will.
But that's what we're lacking in this country is sufficient mental health.
Yeah, but you're right in that you can't. How are you know? It's sometimes it's hard to judge if someone is sane, and maybe they're sane when they buy the weapon, and then. You know, they have a breakdown at some point, and...
Well, people become sane. I mean, people who are, you know, and I always look back at the Virginia Tech shooter, you know. I mean, that was, to me, that was one of the more horrific, because he took a group and just lined them up against a wall, shot them with a pistol, and...
What was the most deadly shooting in history in the U.S.?
The most deadly shooting in the history of the U.S., and I know this one.
I'll tell you. Cause
okay.
Orlando.
Yeah.
Orlando was.
And that was a guy who was clearly had, but he was a guy who also had you taken that, and this is where it becomes problematic, because had you stopped that man right there and said, I believe this man's insane. To really deprive him of his right to bear arms under the Second Amendment, you would have to go to a court and have him deemed unfit, you know, deemed unstable, deemed whatever, which is a very, very difficult thing to do.
I agree, but I do think if you're on a no-fly list...
Yeah, no, I agree with you there.
If you're a suspected terrorist, you shouldn't have no access.
No, you shouldn't have access.
Here's the thing, though. Is that there are people that know that there's something wrong with
them. Well, and I think that's what we're saying about this guy.
I mean,
there was clues.
There are people, but there are people that they know there's something wrong. Like, you know, Chuck, that there is something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know that.
You should not have a gun.
So you fortunately, both of us, all of us, have the insurance that we can go somewhere and get help.
Yeah.
You're not sleeping. You're seeing things. You're hearing voices. you can go somewhere and get help.
You're drooling on yourself.
Yeah.
You're peeing your pants.
You have that capability.
You're shiting.
Mental health in this country is atrocious.
Yeah, it's especially awful. If you don't.
And they don't have, people don't, insurance doesn't cover the way they're supposed to.
And a lot of times to get their meds, I mean, I hate to say it, but a lot of times to get their meds,
they have to go to jail.
You have to go to jail.
What I think about the most is, you know, we work for the government, and I don't know if your benefits are from the county.
My benefits are from my husband.
But they're still government benefits. Yeah. So we have...
And when you say government benefits, your husband works for the government.
Yeah, yes. So we have better benefits than most.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate. You know, I'm very fortunate in that mine will allow for, if I needed it, up to 26 visits to a therapist a year.
Mm-hmm.
And most people have these limits that even if you have good insurance, it has limits mm-hmm. that you can see a therapist 6 or 7 times a year. And that's why so many people are on medications, because it's easier to put people on medication than it is, you know, you can get that pass. You can go to your GP
right.
and get medication all the time. But often medication ain't going to solve the problem.
No.
And what,
well, not by itself. You need both.
You need both. And many times you need hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
And you need... But we are in a different class because we work for the government. We have very good benefits. That's available to so few.
Oh, I know. No, so few. Absolutely.
And when you talk about people that don't have jobs, you're talking about people that, you know, and you take people like ourselves who have our own little quirks. Let's say we don't have jobs. The pressure starts to get to us. Our mental health is going to deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to take up arms against people.
It's hard to know how
be available.
It's hard to know how you react because you don't know. You know,
right.
I hate to think that I would ever hurt anyone. I don't think I would. But, you know, he probably never thought that either.
Think about it. Even if Anthem, a lot of places won't take Anthem anymore because Anthem doesn't pay out
mm-hmm.
yeah.
for mental health. So a lot of places don't take Anthem. Well, half the friggin' country has Anthem insurance.
Yeah.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield and
right.
whatever else. It takes forever, especially if you're a child. It takes forever to find somebody that you can get into that's on your insurance, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's rough. It's hard. It's a hard thing to do.
And that's one thing
that our country lacks.
It is something that we lack, and I think we all agree that more needs to be done with mental health.
Well, I think with mental health, and I think health care in general is, and again, not to get too political, but health care in general should not be a profit and loss issue.
Well, here's the thing, and you talk about providing and making sure everyone has health care, and I know people are, you know, there's people on both sides of that argument. But the thing is, it's a small world, and if someone gets sick, and if they get sick because they don't have access to health care, and you get some pandemic, we're all at risk. So it's in all of our interests that we have a healthy community that we live in.
Well, and you know, as being the founder of the First Church of the Latter-day Colonel.
Yeah, the soul's important too.
Well, no, we believe that we are a brother's keeper, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
And that what we have shall be shared amongst, well, actually what you have should be shared to us.
Right.
And then we will divvy it out as
right.
we see fit.
It's mostly a trickle-down kind of
thing. Yeah, mostly for cause and clothes for me and Shannon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think that if there's one thing, if I was emperor, mm-hmm. if I could change anything.
I would be
when
scared.
You're talking about true, to me, when you're talking about true evil in this country,
mm-hmm.
it's insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have... You know, when they were talking about
look at the guy that had the the medicine that for AIDS patient to the
yeah.
pill that jacked it up to $750 a pill
right.
or something.
Yeah, he's getting
hit. And
yeah,
you
and
know
I mean,
what
that is something that is that should be illegal. I mean,
what always got me with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare was that you did not hear insurance companies screaming about this.
Yeah, because they knew they were going to have a whole pool of customers that they never had before.
Yeah, and they can just deny, you know, it's funny because I use a medicine for nothing serious. It's just occasional bouts of psoriasis. A 2-ounce bottle of this medication, Timmy, it's a liquid, $600. Then my insurance company decided, fuck it, we ain't paying for it anymore. Now, they gave me an alternative that does not work as well, but works, you know. Okay, big deal. But here's the thing. What if I had cancer?
Yeah, they do that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Or what if you were diabetic and needed insulin?
And people talk about death panels, and they don't understand that we have death panels now.
They're called insurance companies.
Exactly.
Okay, Brandy, your final thoughts on Gilbert Twig.
No, I don't have any final thoughts on Gilbert Twig. He was crazy.
He was crazy.
I don't understand those
things. That was a sad occurrence, I think.
It really was.
Colonel. Possibly preventable. My final thought is I'd like to still see the Devil's Palm.
Okay. Brandy, where can people find us?
Find us on Facebook.
Yeah, we have two Facebook pages. We have History Dweebs, in which we update some kind of historical stuff. And then we have History Dweebs, the podcast, which is a really interactive page. It's a lot of fun, and we would love for you to join us if you're not already there. And for all those people who are already on History Dweebs, the podcast page, hi, and we're glad you're listening, and we really appreciate your comments and your participation on the page. It makes it a lot of fun for all of us. And where else can they find
Twitter.
Twitter at History Dweebs 1.
Let's see, not Instagram.
Stitcher.
Libsyn.
We got two new iTunes reviews that we want to say.
iTunes?
Yeah, we got two new positive reviews because last time we had mentioned we had got some bad reviews, and we got two positive ones. One called us Dweeb Fantastic, and the other one says that we give them post-podcast laughs. So thank you both for those 5 stars each. We really appreciate it because we do check the reviews every day, and we appreciate it. You know, sometimes it's discouraging when people say we suck and, you know, they hate us, and, you know, especially the Colonel because he has a very... He doesn't take criticism well, Brandy.
I know.
He's not very fragile. Take criticism well. I like constructive criticism, but when you write something like awful,
you suck.
You're probably banging your sister. That's probably you're probably from some kind of. You probably just got on the internet. You got
an AOL account, probably.
You got a dial up. You're just stupid. I mean, if you want to... So, I have a little bit of respect for the guy who called me a drunken Elmer Fudd.
Yeah.
Okay?
That was spot on. It was accurate.
You put a little bit of work into that.
Yeah.
Okay? But you just say awful, horrible, these guys aren't funny. Well, first of all, there's a woman here, so show a little respect and mention a woman.
Yeah.
And I'm funny. Well, maybe he meant you guys weren't funny.
Oh, man,
funny.
That might be true.
I'm funny.
Okay, so thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Good day, listeners.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.